debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman here with you. Gary Kasparov says, I think his analysis is absolutely accurate. He says, I think if Trump has one chance of staying in power by violating, if not the laws, but some kinds of traditions, he will definitely use it. He goes on to say, that's why giving Trump any chance of surviving politically and staying in power would be disastrous for America. It will lead to the collapse of the alliances like NATO and many American allies. Every country will have to make and cut deals with authoritarian regimes just to survive. So if Trump continues to destroy America and take us down this path that he has for 3.5 years, what's going to happen is, and has already happened to a large extent, although I think the whole world is holding its breath waiting for sanity to return in 6 months. But basically, the rest of the world is like, okay, we're on our own. We can't count on Trump to do this. And just an example of how bizarre and corrupt these guys are. Back in 2014, when they were doing pandemic planning, the Obama administration cut a deal with Philips, which is a manufacturing company based out of, I believe, Holland. It might be Finland or Denmark, but anyhow, it's a European company. They make real high-end ventilators, and the Obama administration cut a deal to buy 10,000 of these high-end ventilators for $9,300 a unit. And they were supposed to be delivered. They were supposed to be delivered, drum roll, by June of 2019. So June of last year. So Trump comes into office. Now, you know, the order's there. Philips has started making these things. Trump comes into office and Philips says, do you want us to speed up production? Do you want us to continue production? Are you going to change your policy? And for 6 months, the Trump administration doesn't even respond to the inquiry. Until January, well, actually, it was in January, Philips reached out again to the Trump administration and said, hey, you know, we were supposed to deliver these ventilators 6 months ago. Do you still want them? And again, for 6 weeks, the Trump administration did not respond to Philips' offer. And then finally, at the last minute, the Trump administration said, yeah, yeah, we'll take them, we'll take them. And at that point, Philips was like, okay, what are you willing to pay? And the Trump administration said, well, we'll give you $50,000 a unit. And keep in mind, the contract with Obama said $9,000, but Trump had blown that up. Philips wasn't asking 50 grand. Trump offered it. And so Philips is like, okay, cool. We'll get them to you by the middle of 2021 now. I mean, it's like just the incompetence, the lying. I got this email from Eric Trump yesterday. Fred, you are not going to believe this. I have been sorting through my father's top supporters, top in all caps. trying to put together a roster for the Trump Donor Hall of Fame, and I came across your file. And then there's this little block where it says donor file, supporter. It's got my name. It says State Oregon, donor since July 2020 campaign gift cycle two. I've sent the money twice. Once was to get the Trump coloring book. And then it says lifetime total $30. Okay, so that's how much I've sent them. And then he says, and then back to Eric Trump. Wow, you should be proud of everything you've accomplished for our movement. My father and I have noticed your dedication, Thomas, which is why I'm reaching out with an exclusive one-time offer for you to go down in history in the Trump Donor Hall of Fame. Now imagine some 80-year-old person who watches Fox News and gets an email like this and goes, wow, the president and the president's son are reaching out to me personally? It goes on to say, this is a very prestigious group of my father's best supporters, best in all caps. And he really wants you, you in all caps, to be a part of it. But I can only hold your spot for 1 hour. After that, I'll be forced to reach out to the next eligible patriot. Please contribute $30 immediately and you'll automatically get your name cemented in the Trump Donor Hall of Fame. And it's got a picture of Donald Trump standing in front of a bunch of plaques that say Trump Donor Hall of Fame. So you're imagining that, you know, he's going to inscribe my name on a plaque and it's going to hang in the White House and all, just for a $30 gift. And his son sent me this by to my name and said, my father and I have been looking over our donors and we came across you. I have never gotten an email like this from any politician in my whole entire life. This is a classic con job. This is a grift. I mean, how do we make it through this? This is insane. Ken Klippenstein is on the line with us. He's the D.C. correspondent with The Nation magazine. Twitter handle is Ken Klippenstein, K-L-I-P-P-E-N-S-T-E-I-N, or at The Nation. And TheNation.com, of course, is the website for The Nation. Ken, brilliant article, how the DHS can still arrest journalists in Portland. Lay this out for us. You've done the deep dive on this. Go for it.
Yeah, so this is really an extraordinary case in which the Oregon Attorney General filed suit against the Department of Homeland Security. Very unusual to see, you know, feds at each other's throats like this. And that lawsuit that they filed sought to get an injunction wherein the DHS wouldn't be able to arrest reporters, journalists, use tear gas on them, those sorts of things. Now, that wasn't entirely successful, but ACLU ended up filing a subsequent lawsuit sort of under the Oregon Attorney General's, and that one was partly successful, got the judge to issue some restraining order against Fed's treatment of journalists and protesters. What I found from a source of mine within Department of Homeland Security was that they were given legal guidance, and it seems like they went to great efforts to keep this internal. They labeled it law enforcement sensitive, which carries very serious administrative penalties if you release it. And it basically told them how to skirt and how to sort of get around some of this restraining order. So, for example, while the restraining order prevents DHS officials from specifically targeting journalists with tear gas, they're still allowed to expose journalists incidentally. That's the term they use, incidentally.
Don't shoot the tear gas canister at the reporter who's standing there with the word press across his chest. Shoot it at the guy next to him.
Exactly.
That's a loophole you could drive a truck through. Has there been any apparent change in the behavior of federal officers who are, you know, in Portland or in other cities as a consequence of this?
Yes, I do think that the restraining order was still a constructive measure, and it, you know, prevented them from doing some of the worst things. So, for example, they can't just arrest journalists for failing to disperse, which is, I believe, something they were doing prior to this restraining order. Mm-hmm. So they can still arrest journalists, but they have to have what's called probable cause for some other crime or some other infraction besides that. So that's still good. It's just unfortunate that DHS instantly tries to find ways to coach their employees. And, you know, sources of mine within DHS that don't like this mission, they'll tell you the same thing, which is that this is sort of a wink and a nod telling people, you know, you don't, you know, there's the spirit of the law and then there's the letter of the law. The cops, they understand what this means. So has it improved? I would say it's improved just because there's been something of a drawdown. So, for example, earlier today, the Wall Street Journal, no great far-left enthusiast publication, said that, you know, for one of the first nights, there's peace in Portland now. And the reason for that is that a lot of the feds have been taken off this mission. And so that, I think, begs the question, you know, why were they sent there if as soon as, you know, a lot of the federal force was removed?
Oh, they were sent there to make a campaign ad for Donald Trump. I mean, they and they've got their footage. In fact, they put a fence around one part of the federal building that was very, very heavily covered in graffiti, specifically so that they couldn't clean the graffiti. All the buildings around there, they clean them up every morning, and including power washing off of the graffiti. But that one building looks like something out of a movie set, like a war zone movie set, and that's where they've been shooting all these Trump campaign commercials. And they always, you know, in the evening, they always be sure to get that part of the building with that camera angle. And that's what shows up on Fox News. And it makes it look like the whole city's a war zone when it's one side of one building.
I think you're exactly right. That's also the attitude of certain individuals within DHS who, you know, I've known for some time now. And they themselves are not, you know, left-wing activists by any means. And they are angered and annoyed at that they have to carry out what many of them regard as political theater instead of the work that they would prefer to be doing, which maybe is tracking criminal gangs, looking at child trafficking.
what a novel idea. But isn't having your federal police agencies engage in political theater a violation of the Logan Act? Or the Hatch Act?
It is.
I guess it would be the Hatch Act.
It is, but
be. Yeah.
It certainly is. But what you're seeing is an administration that does not, I don't think, regard Congress as a co-equal branch of government. I know people on the Hill who conduct oversight of the Homeland Security Department, and they say they often just won't respond to queries that they have. They won't disclose information that they are, you know, legally required to do so. And the problem is that the only oversight we have of the executive branch increasingly has become SCOTUS, which we know has conservative majority and is not willing to go toe-to-toe with Trump on many issues. And then with respect to Congress, they don't have the Senate. So the extent of what they can do is kind of pull funding here and there, which I wish they would consider more because they haven't done enough of that. But really, we have a failure of oversight.
Well, that would require the cooperation of Mitch McConnell. And Mitch McConnell is totally in bed with, you know, any kind of fascism you want to bring to this country. I mean, you know, Mitch McConnell, you know, when Antonin Scalia died a year before an election, Mitch McConnell said, oh, well, you know, that black guy in the White House, we're not going to give him an opportunity to pick a Supreme Court nominee. Or maybe he was thinking that Democrat in the White House. I'm guessing he was thinking both. And now he said, well, you know, if Ruth Bader Ginsburg or somebody, you know, another Democrat kicks off, we will replace that. Or for that matter, they're leaning on Clarence Thomas to resign so that they can put in a 30-year-old, you know, or a 40-year-old. So it's just all nakedly political. Do you think that DHS is going to put up with this? I mean, certainly at its higher levels, I realize at the very top, it's Trump toadies, you know, but you would think that some of the senior professional staff would be looking at this with horror.
They are. That's why people like myself, and not just me, but other reporters are getting leaks. Leaks don't happen on accident. You know, these are individuals with some integrity that are putting their, you know, livelihoods on the line to disclose this information at a time, you know, where unemployment is through the roof and, you know, we're living through a pandemic. You have to really believe in something, I think, in order to come forward with stuff like this. And so you are seeing a lot of dissension within the ranks, which, again, a lot of these guys are conservative. This isn't a partisan thing. They just believe, you know, rightly in my view, that the administration is undermining their mission in a way that, as was described to me, they won't be able to recover their credibility with the public for years to come.
Well, and the same could be true of our elections. I mean, today Trump is doing everything he can to damage belief, faith and belief in our elections because he knows he's going to lose one and he's going to claim that it was fraud. It's like this,
yeah,
this,
really
this seems to be his campaign. Ken, we're going to hit a break here in just a few seconds, but my apologies. We've got about 20 seconds. But why do you think Trump is so aggressively trying to dismantle American institutions and destroy credibility in American value systems?
I think that when you look at an agency like DHS, which is uniquely responsive to the executive branch of the president and was designed to be such, they are not neutral in the same way that the Justice Department is. You see an example of Trump trying to move power towards agencies that will be responsive to his wishes and make the presidency and the executive more powerful. I think that's the general thrust of.
So he's doing it to enhance his own power. Yeah, makes perfect sense.
I believe so.
Ken Klippenstein, he's writing for The Nation, thenation.com. You can check out his most recent pieces titled How the DHS Can Still Arrest Journalists in Portland. It's brilliant. Thanks, Ken, for dropping by.
Thanks for having me.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Justin Frank, psychoanalyst and clinical professor at the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Science at George Washington University, author of Trump on the Couch and Obama and Bush on the Couch as well. His Twitter handle, Justin Frank MD, is on the line with us. Dr. Frank, welcome back. Why do you think it is that Donald Trump seems so aggressively interested in actually destroying our democratic republic? He, you know, the key, Thomas Paine said, the beating heart of democracy is the vote. Donald Trump is trying to destroy our belief in our election systems. Why would he do that and so many of the other things he's doing that are literally tearing this country apart?
Well, it depends. Hi, Tom. It depends on how deep you want to go. So I'm not sure how to answer that question since I'm a psychoanalyst. And it might not make sense.
Oh, we've got about 4 minutes or 5 minutes, so whatever you can do in that.
No problem. If we have 4 minutes, God, that's like a whole analysis. Here's the thing. He wants to destroy anything that has to do unconsciously with his father. And that includes the fathers of our country and the founding fathers. He wants to destroy our republic because he wants to destroy ever having to rely on the past. He really hates a lot of things in his childhood. The second thing is he wants to destroy our belief systems. The reason he lies is because he was lied to as a little boy when his parents told him they loved him. So for the rest of his life, he's been lying to everybody else. He was first lying in order to build his career, in order to improve his self-esteem when he had reading problems. And then later in life, now as president, he's actually lying to save himself. The third thing is that the reason he wants to destroy our voting system is that he needs to be able to continue to project, which means he needs to continue to disavow who he is. And the only way he can do that is by breaking down things that are essentials of our democracy. And by that, for instance, he sent out a tweet the 3rd of August in all caps, and it said, something like, fake news is the enemy of the people. And that was a double projection in all caps, because he is the fake news. He makes everything up, including recently about the coronavirus, also about the violence in Portland. Also, I mean, he's been making things up his whole presidency about those big groups of people coming up from the south to the fence and all that. But the second thing is he's projecting the fact that it's the enemy of the people, that fake news is the enemy of the people. He's actually therefore telling the truth about himself. He, Donald Trump, who is fake news, is also the enemy of the people because he is undermining
you called him
American democracy.
Right. You recently called him psychotic. That's a very specific and strong label. Please explain.
It's a strong label outside of the medical profession, but in my profession, it's not such a strong label because there are lots of aspects of psychosis, and maybe it was too. People think that if you're psychotic, a lot of lay people think that if you're psychotic, it means you can't tie your shoes and you walk around talking to yourself and wearing, you know, a tin hat and everything. That's just not true. Psychotic has to do with a thought disorder. It's about a disorder of thinking. And it's so profound that you cannot assess what's real and what isn't. You cannot do what's called reality testing. If you have compromised reality testing, you are on the edge of being psychotic, especially if it's chronic and it's consistent.
And is this why he says that testing is what gives us all these cases of coronavirus?
That's correct. He says that testing gives us all the cases of coronavirus. That's a psychotic thought. He has what's called a thought disorder. That's a classic example, but we're so used to normalizing him that and accepting the fact that he has all these weird thoughts. There's so many that are psychotic. You can make a list of them. He is a textbook psychotic person. Now,
so
there used to
Professor,
be a term called psychotic character, which is maybe what he is. I don't know.
So, Professor Frank, what do we do with this? How should Americans respond to a psychotic president?
the main thing to respond to is to try to not believe anything he says and not give him too big of a bully pulpit, to not continue to do those things. The second obvious thing is to mobilize, and make sure he's voted out in November, but there needs to be some safeguards set up by the politicians to make sure we're safe from him being more psychotic while he's president, because he still will be president until January 20th. So I think that there needs to be some safeguards set up in the White House guarding him. He needs to be quarantined in some way. I don't know how to do it.
Dr. Justin Frank, his book is Trump on the Couch. And Dr. Frank, thanks so much for dropping by today. It's always great
talking.
Thank
you. Okay.
Dr. Frank, you can tweet him at JustinFrankMD. How do we deal with a psychotic president? Your thoughts? Tom Hartman here with you and Jay in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Jay, what's on your mind today?
You know, I have some friends who are progressive Bernie supporters. One's in your neck of the woods. We were talking the other night, and he says, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats said nothing about Afghanistan, and Trump is trying to get us out. I don't know how to respond to him. I'm not buying it, but I wanted to hear what you would say to something like that.
If Trump wanted us out of Afghanistan, Jay, we would be out of Afghanistan. Anything that says Trump is trying is BS. You know, full stop, right? Trump is trying to get us a national health care program. Trump is trying to bring jobs back to America. Right. This is what Trump says. Look at what he does, not what he says. Scott in Portland. Hey, Scott, what's up?
I know we all have a long wish list of things that we'd like to do when and if we can. Important starting point is to generate government income. And to do that, I recommend that we raise tax rates on high earners and corporations, lift the Social Security limits, and fund the IRS in order to get the mechanism to get that money back in. And then we can go on a spending spree and do all the fun things we want to do.
Yeah, we need to roll back the Reagan tax cuts. It's that simple.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
The Reagan tax cuts began this process. That began the process of destroying the American middle class and building a billionaire class. We didn't even have a billionaire in 1980. There were no billionaires in America. I mean, there were people worth hundreds of millions of dollars, but there were no billionaires. Yeah. Ronald Reagan brought us billionaires. And,
yeah,
and you know, enough already.
And he raised rates on Social Security, which was the biggest tax raise in our history.
Oh, he doubled the Social Security tax, and he cut Social Security benefits. This all took place in 1983, as I recall, and kind of phased in. In fact, the last year of the phase-in, I think it was last year, the last year that you could qualify for benefits when you were 65. Now you've got to be 67. And back in the 80s, you could literally, if you were over 65, and didn't live in a super expensive city or something, you could literally live on Social Security. Today, good luck. Very, very hard to live on Social Security. So, yeah, I'm with you. Thanks a lot for the call. Phyllis in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Phyllis, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I was talking with a neighbor of mine who works out as a letter carrier out of our local station. He said he and the other workers were doing massive overtime. So obviously the message from the new Postmaster General has not gotten down to the suits at his station to say no overtime. He said that the reason that people are not getting the mail is because there are massive no-shows at work. He said that so many people are staying home because they have COVID. They're being quarantined because of COVID. They're taking care of people who have family members who had COVID, or they're just scared of COVID and are not coming out.
That's interesting. There was an article in one of your local newspapers there in Philadelphia that I read over the weekend suggesting that in at least one postal station, the order had come down. It's you had to sort mail by hand. You can't use the sorting machines. If I'm remembering this correctly, which would lead to arguably massive overtime. That's fascinating. Phyllis, if you learn any more, let us know and keep us up to date. Thank you for the call. Gary in Arlington Heights, Illinois. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. As a 36-year-old retired letter carrier, union steward and branch officer, I call your attention to U.S. Code Title 18. Okay, 1701 says delay of addresses civilians. Whoever knowingly or willfully obstructs or retards the passage of mail. 1703, whoever being the Postal Service officer or employee detains, delays, the mail. It is a violation of federal law, and the Postmaster General is not exempt.
Okay? Wow.
You cannot delay. You cannot delay first class mail. Not the big man, not the supervisor, not the carrier. I represented several carriers.
Yeah, Gary, the given that this is federal code, that means that the man who would have to enforce that law, who would have to hold the Postmaster General accountable, would be Bill Barr, the head of the Justice Department, is it not?
U.S. States Attorneys, Democratic States Attorneys Association can file suit against DeJoy personally, not just the post office.
Right, but they can't hold him. I mean, you know, you were citing criminal statute. I don't believe, maybe I'm wrong, you can't enforce a criminal law without the Department of Justice, a federal criminal law.
You go to federal court and let Barr sit there and say, oh, we're not going to enforce it?
Right, so you're going to use the courts to try to force him to do it, and he's going to successfully put that off until January. This is what Trump is doing with his taxes right now.
You can't stop him from going into courts, and they've been embarrassed before going to the courts.
Yeah, yeah. No, Gary, thank you for the information. That's a useful next step, but I'm just very concerned that any attempt to use the courts at this point in time is going to be too little too late. Zach in North Hollywood, California. Hey, Zach, what's on your mind today?
Morning, Tom. You know, we got here on a 40-year media diet of right-wing buzz phrases and buzzwords, as you're well aware, and a compromised FCC. So my suggestion for your question this morning is what do we do? And for people who think, I have to stipulate, but it's simple. All we have to do is determine the difference between truth and pure propaganda, then act accordingly. It's simple.
Yeah, except that in areas of opinion, one man's truth is another, or one person's truth is another person's fiction. I think that, you know, if you want a reducible bottom line, the bottom line to which all of the attacks against democracy can be reduced, it would be money in politics. It seems to me that getting money out of politics, you know, banning political activity of all corporations, period, full stop, just like we at law banned political activity by churches. Now, that ban is not being enforced by this administration, and it was not by the Bush administration, but it's there. Ban that political activity, and then also put very, very clear campaign limits and end PACs and super PACs and all this other nonsense, and just get money the hell out of politics.
But
it seems
not
like that's the most straightforward way.
But, Tom, it's not just political activity. That's where we go wrong. The media has to have a big mitt in that action. The media has to...
Oh, sure. And the way to deal with that is to break up big media.
Well, not only that. You know what my suggestion is? Make the FCC part of the DOJ and give them teeth where they can go out and just take people right off the air if they start demonstrating fascistic tendencies. That's it.
Yeah, I don't want an official censorship force, and I don't want the FCC having police powers. And the FCC does a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, they regulate free. And most of what they do is make sure that airplane transmissions don't interfere with CB radio transmissions and stuff like that. You know, they monitor and police and regulate the radio frequency spectrum, and now increasingly the light spectrum.
Wow.
Yeah, that's most of what they do. As a ham radio operator, I'm licensed by the Federal Communications Commission. As a broadcast engineer back in the day when I was, this was back in the 60s, I was licensed by the FCC. I had a radio telephone operator's license, which you had to have back in those days in order to work in a radio station. You had to know how to turn the transmitter on and off, basically, which I did every morning when I came into the station. And so, you know, I don't think giving that agency police, I get what you're saying, but if you look at when America had a politically diverse media landscape, It was prior to the mid-90s. And what happened in the mid-90s that changed that equation was the signing in 1996 of the Telecommunications Act by Bill Clinton. And it wasn't just Bill Clinton's fault, obviously. You know, this was a totally bipartisan thing. And the Telecommunications Act did some good things and did some terrible things. And the main terrible thing that it did is it did away with ownership rules. It used to be that if you owned a radio station in a town, you couldn't also own a TV station and or a newspaper. You had to pick one of the three. And if you had one in one town, you couldn't pick, you couldn't own one, another one in that state. You could have one in another state, maybe if you had a home in that state, depending on the state. States had rules, states had laws, and all this kind of stuff. All that got blown up in the middle of 1996, and that's what brought us this. Chaz in Lakewood, Washington. Hey, Chaz, what's up?
How's it going, comrade? Another glorious day, et cetera, et cetera, huh?
In Trumpistan, yes.
Yes,
what's
sir.
On your mind?
Yeah, I was told, get to the point, Charles. I just want to know, when history looks back on this period of time, and yes, we are living perhaps in the most historical times of our lives, when you write the book, how many volumes is that going to be?
Well, I wrote the book. I was editing it this weekend. I just got it back from the copy editor, The Hidden History of Oligarchy. And it's basically about, you know, the rise of oligarchy in the United States. It's happened two times in the past. It happened in the South in the period of time from 1820 to 1860 and led to the Civil War. And then it happened nationwide in the period from 1890 to 1930. And it led to the Great Depression. And in both cases, those were major reboots of our country. Now it's been happening since the election of Ronald Reagan. We've got a 40-year rise of oligarchy now, and we're at terminal oligarchy. And the question is, are we going to fight it back for a third time successfully, or are we going to succumb to it? Is it going to destroy our constitutionally limited republic? Go ahead.
Yeah, think of 20,000 lies have been told so far. To categorize those would take multiple books. Not accounting for his actions, I fear for, Mr. Biden gets the election, he's going to have years of work ahead of him just to try to get the democracy back on track. And it's never been in a more delicate balance than it is right now.
Oh, and the biggest challenge he's going to have are Trump humpers like Jim Jordan, who are still going to be in Congress. I mean, there's a bunch of them. Now you've got over 30 QAnon people running for political office around the country, including a couple of them running for the U.S. House of Representatives. One of them actually has a good shot of winning. So, this is not going to go away with Donald Trump. And we really need to be having a conversation about how do we basically Trump-proof America.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
So would you like to watch the Tom Hartman program? All 3 hours. Patreon.com/Tom Hartman. T-H-O-M-H-A-R-T-M-A-N-N. All run together. Special content that we put up every single week that is unique specifically to our Patreon page. So check it out. Patreon.com/Tom Hartman. Thank you. David in Mequon, Wisconsin. Hey, David, what's up?
It's Mequon, Wisconsin, Tom, just to be clear. Thanks for taking my call. Really quickly, I just wanted to point to some examples that I think are pertinent to what we were talking about with the voter fraud. If you look back at the Atlantic, July 24th, the New York City primary absentee ballots, 20%. Were considered messed up, and you got lawsuits all over the place. In Paterson, New Jersey, which is the third largest city.
David, what's your point? Where are you going with this?
Well, the council people there, the council president, along with the elect, were just caught for election fraud.
Let's start with your point, David. What's your point?
What I'm saying is there is election fraud going on, and that we have to
realize. No, this is not election fraud. Oh, yes, there is election fraud going on. Absolutely. Brian Kemp committed massive election fraud down in Georgia when he threw, you know, tens of thousands, nearly a million African-Americans off the voting rolls. This has been happening in state after state that are controlled by Republican secretaries of state. You've got states where they, you know, you've got vote by mail coming because people don't want to get sick and die. And these red states are saying, no, we're not going to change the rules. And it's happening in New York State as well. And I wish some reporter would stick a microphone in front of Andrew Cuomo and say, why aren't you cleaning up your own state? Because, we, you know, we've got some serious problems here. There is going to be an election. The Democrats passed out of the House of Representatives H.R. 1, the very first piece of legislation that was passed when Nancy Pelosi took over a year and a half ago as Speaker of the House. H.R. 1 provided for an election integrity, election security. It funded the elections. It gave a lot of money to the states to do this and said, you know, we're going to have safe, reliable, predictable, non-fraudulent elections. And Mitch McConnell said, no, we're not going to even consider this. Us Republicans rely on election fraud in order to stay in power. They have for 40 years now. And they're you know, hell-bent for leather that they're going to continue to. Bob in Minneapolis. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, I don't have any answer to the psychotic other than we vote him out. But I need to know if you can expound on the idea that what we're getting ready for in October is one my wife calls it a Hail Mary. But I think that they will the Republicans and Trump will do everything they can to make good on everything that we want right now come October, because that will sway the masses to the voting that they want. And then the moment that he's back in, it goes back to what it is today. So why is it not obvious that this is what is about to happen in the country?
Well, this is the last caller, Bob. This was, you know, I'm assuming that he wasn't just some guy, that he was probably a Republican operative. They are doing, these people actually, you know, I've been very reluctant through the 16 years I've been doing this show to ever characterize anybody as hating America. But if these guys don't hate America, then they hate American values. They hate the values of democracy, you know, a small d democracy. They hate the values of a republic. They want to have an autocracy. They want to have a strongman government. They're doing everything they can to bring a strongman government about. And step one to destroying a democratic republic like the United States, step one is to do what the last caller did, which is, we've got problems with our elections. We can't trust our elections. Don't believe it when they tell you that Donald Trump lost. Don't believe, you know, and other Republican candidates, they didn't actually lose. No, those Democrats, you know, et cetera. They are willing to destroy our country to hold on to political power. And we have been watching this from billionaires like the Koch brothers and their buddies for 40 years now. Burrowing their way in, things like ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, where you get one-on-one with Republican state legislators and lobbyists. They sit literally one-on-one, 100 legislators, 100 lobbyists. They all sit together. They work, you know, the lobbyists bring pre-written legislation. The Republican legislators shovel it into states all over the country. That's how we got, you know, stand your ground laws. These people are not just willing to destroy America in order to increase their own wealth and power. They are enthusiastic about it. That's what's going on right now, Bob.
Well, why aren't we the masses talking now and espousing the idea that in October, come October, right before the election, they'll do everything that we want to have done just to sway the audience over, and then it'll be over.
I don't understand what... Bob, thank you for the call. I think the bottom line here is that, you know, we have to recognize, we have to acknowledge, we have to realize, you know, what the hell is going on here. You've got the Republican Party and McDaniel or whatever her name is, Romney McDaniel, tweeting this morning, you know, they're going to do ballot harvesting, Democrat, you know, with vote by mail. We've been voting by mail. There, you've got five states in the United States where it's entirely vote by mail. And one of them is Oregon. Jeff in Portland. You vote by mail, don't you, Jeff? What's up?
I do, Tom. Good morning. You started the show riffing about how we need to overwhelmingly turn out in November. And, of course, Biden's campaign, the platform, and his choice for VP are going to largely determine that. I don't know if you saw it, but on Friday, James Clyburn was emphasizing to Judy Woodruff that he'd like to see an African-American woman on the Supreme Court and diversity in Biden's cabinet, putting those as a priority over who Joe chooses for VP. But right. Tom, when it comes to the issues and the VP pick, Medicare for All, Green New Deal, Black Lives Matter, cannabis legalization, all pull extremely well in our party and generate great enthusiasm. So in my opinion, if we want to activate the people who are going to get the people to get out and vote, it just makes sense to have a progressive running mate. And as Heather McGee told Chuck Todd yesterday, a new poll from Avalanche shows that person to be Elizabeth Warren. Tom, don't we need a progressive like Warren to generate that excitement?
I think we do, Joe, but you know, I'll take anybody right now, anybody, except a Republican. Scotty in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Scotty, what's on your mind today?
Good morning or afternoon, wherever you are. I was struck by a comment of Dr. Frank. Basically, he was talking about psychological disorder, and I've been trying to bang the gong about the fact that we are not in any kind of equilateral disagreement in politics. We are in a situation where a bunch of people see reality and other people have a cognitive disorder. And I noticed a situation some years ago that illustrates one device of this. When you might recall, when Rush Limbaugh gained a little infamy, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, talking about contraception in school health programs, and this woman got in conspicuous trouble saying she wanted to keep it, and Rush Limbaugh called her a slut and insulted her virtue and integrity.
Is
and
that
made
Sandra Bland?
Think about it.
No, Sandra Bland was a victim, you know, of the police. I'm forgetting the woman's name, but anyway, yes, continue.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, to illustrate the point, though, it was more about what happened then was that you got a bunch of Republican candidates. It was early 2016, maybe, when this thing became relevant, saying, oh, no, I wouldn't say anything like that. I mean, God, that's just not nice to say. But it sure is an issue that they have contraception in school health programs and colleges. And all of a sudden, I sat back and said, wait a minute, we just saw the limbo. How low can you go? Okay,
right.
What you got is he makes this outrageous proposition, and then he sets up all these politicians who can then back off slightly and sound sane, still talking crazy.
Yeah, and by the way, it was Sandra
and
Fluke.
This goes on. This device I'm seeing replicated on a daily and weekly
basis.
Yes,
what you are looking at, Scotty, is contagious psychosis. Some forms of mental illness, particularly those associated with thought disorders, are actually contagious, particularly the ones that travel through cultures. In fact, I would argue that war is a form of psychosis. People are catching it from Trump. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, not too much, Tom. I just want to say in a post-Trump America, we need to cut our reliance on executive power. And when I say we, I'm obviously talking about the 63 million people that voted for Trump, but I'm also talking about liberals as well. I thought about this when I saw a Forbes article that disassembled the myth that Trump is good for the stock market. Trump was actually pretty far down on the list, right above Jimmy Carter. And it made me think we need to return to a Carter-era America where Congress has more responsibility and more authority. And I mean, there's many examples. Also, when I was in Iraq, the Iraqis, we did a survey. The Iraqis found George Bush and Parvez Musharraf, two of the great leaders of the world, because they were strong. Okay, that's all well and good, but it's not American. All right, we're not supposed to have an authoritarian leader. And the other thing is, for instance, no one's talking about it, but Donald Trump is talking about resuming nuclear weapons testing while simultaneously he unilaterally pulled us out of the Open Skies Treaty, which would prevent an accidental nuclear war. So you think about that, nuclear testing while taking away the safeguard for an accidental nuclear war. And nobody's even questioning that. You see what I'm saying?
Right. Donald Trump is doing everything he can and has been for 3.5 years, literally. I mean, quite literally. I mean, this is not a metaphorical statement. He is doing everything within his power at multiple levels to destroy this country, to destroy our reputation, to destroy our government, to destroy the institutions of our government, to destroy our faith in a democratic republic. He is doing everything he can to destroy this republic. The only question, there's no doubt about that, there's no disputing that. The question, and I asked this last week and we had a conversation about it, is why? You know, is he doing this because he's dancing to the tune of some other government or a collection of other governments? Is he doing this because he's an oligarch and he's in with the other international oligarchs and they like oligarchy and they hate democracy? So he's doing it to help destroy democracy all around the world. He's throwing in with Orban and Modi and Duda and et cetera. Or is he doing it because he's just pissed off at America because fewer people showed up for his inauguration than for Barack Obama's? And broadly speaking, he's not loved and popular in this country. Or is it all of the above? I'm leaning toward all of the above, but who knows? So.
Yeah, I think it's kind of all of the above. Plus, I think Donald Trump, I mean, as much as we hate to admit it, was intelligent enough to recognize, because of the economic conditions under an oligarchy, that Americans are vulnerable. We want to be told. At least he knew that 63 million people want to be told that everything is okay from a familiar face. They want to see a white guy up there. I mean, I hate to be crude about it, but an elder white guy, patriarchy, to assure us that tomorrow is going to be better, even though there's no evidence. There's no evidence. That's what I'm saying. The lie about him being so good for the stock market. How's your 401k? That's what conservatives always say. But it's a lie. He's right above Jimmy Carter. William Jefferson Clinton had the best stock market performance of any, according to Forbes.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think FDR would have spectacular stock market performance.
Go back and check out the article. I don't know where FDR was.
Yeah, maybe the study didn't go back that far. And you know, different people use different metrics. But the bottom line is that, you know, Donald Trump was handed a growing economy from Barack Obama. This is the second time in the last 20 years that a Republican has totally screwed the economy. George W. Bush did it in 2008, and Barack Obama had to pick up the pieces and put the country back together. Donald Trump is doing it right now, and Joe Biden is going to have to step in and pick up the pieces. You know, and onward we go. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman. Marty in Seattle. Hey, Marty, what's up?
I'm just confounded by the Republicans' approach to a convention this year. I just don't understand what the point is having no media there. They're supposed to be transparent.
Well, I think they've walked back on that. Trump was just trying to punish the media. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if something... This is the thing. You have to go back and you look at that window of time, you know, that, say, 6 hours on either side of it, window of time, what stories were percolating at that moment when Trump said, oh, we're not going to have media at the RNC. Because by talking about the media, he knows that the media will focus on that story. And it was the media instead at that moment focusing on something, you know, Michael Cohen writing his new book about all Trump's criminality, or Deutsche Bank deciding that they're going to investigate Trump's personal banker. There's a bunch of stuff that was happening around the time that happened. I don't remember the specifics, but that's the kind of thing that Trump would say, not because he actually intends to do it, but because he's trying to derail the news cycle for 24 hours. He's the master at this. He's been doing this since the 1970s. This has literally been his principal business strategy his whole entire life.
Yeah, he's the master of disaster.
Yeah, there you go. Marty, thanks for the call. Alfred in Miami. Hey, Alfred, what's up?
Why is Trump doing this, dismantling all the regulations? Like, who is behind this all? And I have to say, it's got to be Steve Bannon, which we all know about anyway. But when you watch The Great Divide from Frontline, and then you watch more of his YouTube interviews, you see that he's really clear on saying he wants to dismantle the United States because the corruption is so large and the institutions have become failures that he feels the only way we could get better is to completely restart. I mean, he makes
right.
It
he
clear,
said deconstruct the administrative funny. State was his phrase.
Yeah. And he's got together with this guy called Kyle Bass, who's on CNBC all the time. He's a hedge fund guy. He's just going into China and how we just have to totally dismantle that arrangement, trade agreements and everything. And you have him on that front and Steve Bannon on the other front. And these guys have a lot, you know, they're in the media all the time. So it's not even like they're fringe conspiracy theorists. And, you know, and we all know Trump with conspiracy theories. So that's got to be the reason why he's doing all this.
It may well be. It makes a certain amount of sense. Alfred, thank you. And by the way, let's just acknowledge this is a fundamentally anti-American agenda that these Republicans have adopted. David in San Francisco. Hey, David, what's up?
You know, since you're a ham and understand satellites and everything, I just have a simple question. On November 3rd, could Trump shut down the internet for a couple of hours without revealing what happened and that it was him, you know, just to kick over the anthill, just to disrupt things so that he could contest it?
I don't think that Trump could, but there's little doubt in my mind that China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, some of the countries that have, you know, the money, the resources, and the North Korea, possibly, lack of internal accountability. In other words, nobody's going to stop them or hold them accountable. You know, any one of those countries may well be able to. You're thinking that that would be the event that would cause the disruption that would allow Trump to proclaim he won or something?
Just to disrupt things, even if it was only for a few hours. And that was my exact thought, that, you know, the world is like a three-legged oligarch stool, and Trump's up for re-election, so it would behoove China and Russia to help him out with this.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and there is evidence that both those countries very much want him reelected. David, thank you for the call. Dennis in Aptos, California. Hey, Dennis, what's up?
Yeah, I've been sitting here thinking about ways that the process of moving mail can keep going without it being slowed down much. And one of the things I was wondering is, I myself, and I'm sure millions of other people, pay each bill by mail. And, you know, we have the opportunity to do it online instead. I rarely ever do, or even go into an office, which my water company is 2 miles away from me. The other thing is, I was wondering, you know, again, this maybe would be individual post offices. Is there a way that people could go in and volunteer a few hours, stick mail in P.O. boxes?
There's not. Before you can put your hands on somebody's mail, you have to go through the civil service exam. You have to go through a background check. You have to go through all the whole song and dance that people have to go through in order to get hired by the post office. And then you have to be trained. So, no, the post office, you know, would not be able to accept volunteers, which is unfortunate, but, you know, makes a certain amount of sense. What we need to do is be calling. And, Dennis, thank you for the call. Every single one of us, you need to be calling your members of Congress. You have one member of the U.S. House of Representatives and two senators, unless you live in D.C., in which case you just have Eleanor Norton. But you need to be calling all three of those people and saying, I am really concerned that the mail is slowing down. Do something. The number for the switchboard at Congress is 202-224-3121.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Lulu in Seattle. Hey, Lulu, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to talk about Russian interference in the election. And what I wanted to talk about is looking at Putin possibly having a two-pronged plan, one for trying to get Trump elected, but also a plan, and I think this is the bigger one, of when he loses. I think Putin is not solely here to, you know, try and get Trump to win. In a tweet by Natasha Bertrand and Chris Murphy yesterday, counterintel chief Evanina was saying that there's Russian assets in the United States to disrupt the election. But it's my thought that they're not here solely here to just disrupt the election, that they're here to infiltrate our grids and sow further division and racial hatred, to find our weaknesses and exploit them in preparation for when Trump loses the election. I really believe the Russians are playing the long game here, and that Russia really considers themselves at war with us actively right now, and this is how they're going about it. And I wanted to hear your thoughts about that.
I think you're probably right on all counts, Lulu. And the one qualification I would make to it is that I think that we do ourselves a disservice when we think it's only Russia doing this. This is Seth Abramson wrote this brilliant book, Proof of Conspiracy. It's like 800 pages. I mean, it's just it's a tome, but boy, is it in detail. And he goes into considerable detail about how in the 2016 election, you know, Russia interfered in our elections in ways that we all know about. They were, you know, they were indicted by Mueller's team and, you know, et cetera, all that stuff. But Abramson also describes how there was interference in the U.S. election coming out of Israel. There was interference in the U.S. election coming out of Saudi Arabia. There was interference in the U.S. election coming out of China. And I'm guessing this time around, it might even be North Korea. I mean, there's a bunch of autocrats all, you know, maybe Erdogan's Turkey. Autocrats all over the world have a stake in seeing Donald Trump take down democracy in the United States. If America ceases to be the country that stands up for democratic values that we historically have been, and becomes an autocratic state itself, from their point of view, that's a great thing, because that's the end of democracy all around the world, and they don't have to deal with that. So, Lulu, thank you for the call. Spot on. Evelyn in Alexandria, Louisiana. Hey, Evelyn, what's on your mind?
Hi. As a veteran, we get medication that must be kept at a temperature that's kept cooled and refrigerated. and it comes from a distribution center. It doesn't come from the local VA. It can come from, say, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And if it's not kept at that temperature when you get it, you can't reuse that medication. You can't use it. You have to discard it. So that's a big concern with not having the post office deliver your medication on time. And that affects the quality of your life and the quality of your health care. So not having that postal system in place where they're delaying it or not delivering it on time affects our nation's veterans who defended and upheld the Constitution of the United States of America that helped to keep us free.
Wow. Evelyn, you know, thank you for the call. Thank you for your service, and thank you for pointing that out. That's you're absolutely right. And that's pretty breathtaking when you think of it in those terms. Thank you. Brian in Granville, Michigan. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm concerned. I just don't feel like the Democratic Party is taking seriously the threats to our election right now. I mean, several, you hear people on shows and they're asked questions about it, and they all talk about just getting out the vote. And, you know, what do we do when the exit polls show 15% difference between that and
the official
and what the election official results are.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we need to be on the alert for redshift and, you know, and hopefully knock wood, the Democrats are on this. Actually, you know, the last time Tom Perez was on this program, and I'm not sure he's going to come back because I really pushed him hard, but we'll see. In any case, you know, he pointed out that they are hiring battalions of lawyers to get ready for this. And
okay.
You know, and that's pretty much, go ahead.
My question is, how many lawyers does it take to stop Kristallnacht?
Right, right. Well, Kristallnacht and the election are two different things, you know. And Kristallnacht, I mean, I think they thought that that was going to be Portland.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. But I it seems to me, Brian, that the biggest concern here is you know, Trump doing something, and thank you for the call, Brian, Trump doing something truly outrageous between now and the election, and then the second period, which is actually a period of greater danger for this republic, is the period from November 3rd, when we flush the, you know, whatever, till January 20th, at noon, Donald Trump has to be escorted out of the White House. Anyhow, thanks so much for being with us today. Democracy is not a spectator sport, as Bernie Sanders said on the show for years and years and years, and Barack Obama has said more than once, President Obama, I will tell you too, it's not a spectator sport. It requires you, so get out there, get active, tag, you're it. Be good to yourself and the people around you, please. It was a tough time. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.